The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
Are you ready? It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's episode 179 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening because we get a great update from Sam Johnson, one of the most prolific comics creators in the business today. He talks about when we can expect Cabracini, Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman, as well as Geek Girl in the near future. And he also discusses what's going on with The Almighty's, a great book that he's been working on. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Today I'm talking with Sam Johnson, the creator of Geek Girl and Cabracini, Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman, and also The Almighty's. How are you doing today, Sam?
I'm good, thank you. And you?
Doing very well. And I understand you have some big news to let people know about. Why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, basically, those that are familiar with me and my work will be aware that the Cabracini, Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman, and the Geek Girl miniseries have been in the works for some time. Cabra has made some appearances in anthologies. Geek Girl's had her issue zero, but now we've got things. They've gone pretty far in terms of what needs to be done for the miniseries, so we've now actually got them slated finally for release next year. And I've got a free digital comic out, Actuality Press 1, which previews both of those miniseries, as well as the already out Almighty's 0 and 1.
Okay, so how does somebody get that free comic?
If you go to actualitypress.com, click on the news, that's the first thing it will take you to. You can download it.
Okay, that sounds good. Now I've had a chance to read it, and I like all what I'm seeing on all three of the books. So you're doing good stuff. Talk a little bit. I always kind of feel bad because we have to recap for some folks that may not have heard before. Why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about what Geek Girl is all about?
Okay, so Geek Girl is Ruby Kay, who's like a hot, popular college chick. And she gets what she wants. She's kind of an it girl. She overhears this guy, Trevor, who's like the college brainiac, talking to his friend, Jeff, about how he's invented these super tech glasses, which will give him super strength and flight abilities. Ruby decides she wants them, gets these two guys drunk in a game of strip poker, wins the glasses. So whereas they were intended for your kind of traditional geeky, nerdy type guy to then become the superhero, they've ended up in the hands of this kind of it girl. But there's a glitch in the glasses. They're going to affect her brain in ways she's not necessarily aware of. So it's a flip on Peter Parker becomes this cool superhero thing. It's kind of the other way around, because the effect the glasses have on her is Ruby Kay is cool. Geek Girl is not perceived as cool by her cool clique friends. But as a result of that, she may find out who her real friends are and may find that she's living a more sort of rewarding existence than the kind of superficial lifestyle she was previously.
It's kind of funny because I always think that in real life, if somebody was to actually get powers, they'd be the cool ones. But it's funny that her group of friends don't consider that to be something cool.
Well, it's their world, basically. I mean, they're, you know, you've got to wear the right clothes. And the glasses, for starters, you know, on that very shallow level, they think Ruby looks dorky in the glasses. Mm-hmm. And then because of what the glasses are doing to her, it's kind of making her, it's affecting her sort of physical mechanism somewhat, which in Geek Girl Zero causes her to accidentally not drink so that these friends, in inverted commas, and this is not the done thing in when the most important thing is what you look like. Mm-hmm. You can't be knocking drinks over your friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not so good. So, yeah, so in the book, I've noticed you've introduced a couple of new characters. You've introduced a friend of hers. Is Summer part of that clique?
Yeah, Summer was there in Geek Girl Zero. Summer is part of that group, but Summer is a more rounded individual, more of a good person than the rest of the group. And Summer is effectively Ruby's best friend. Summer is also, her dad's like a super comic book geek, so she gets all like the superhero stuff, and when Ruby lands these glasses, it's Summer that's actually encouraging her to get into the world of, in inverted commas, tights and capes. This isn't something that Ruby would necessarily have come up with on her own. So Summer is very integral to the whole Geek Girl thing.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a bad girl involved too, somebody that actually causes another hero to go to be hospitalized. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the preview that's in Actuality Press 1, it's like you've got 3 pages of the first issue of the Geek Girl miniseries. And what we do here is, whereas Geek Girl Zero was very much establishing, you can still get Geek Girl Zero at actualitypress.com, by the way. And anyway, Geek Girl Zero is about setting up Ruby K, the college girl's world. And it's very sort of ground level, and we get to know her friends and all that. And the superheroism is only sort of just coming into that world. Now, when we hit Geek Girl 1, the first issue of the miniseries, she's out there. I mean, the issue starts off with her out there flying on patrol, because that's what she thinks you do as a superhero, out looking for crime. And it so happens that this super villainess Lightning Storm, she gets called Lightning Storm by the media, no one knows who she is, comes out of nowhere and decimates, for want of a slightly better word, Neon Girl, who's like the premier superheroine of Maine, where Ruby lives. So this throws Ruby in headlong into this superhero world, because Neon Girl gets taken down right in front of her while she's out on patrol, and then Lightning Storm disappears, and Neon Girl's like, well, you're a superhero, right? So you need to take care of her in my place.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's Neon Girl's powers? Is it light power, or what's that like?
It's lightning. She can fly, but when she uses her power, that gives her flight, but it also, she has sort of like lightning running through her veins, and she can channel it out of her hands and do extremely powerful blasts. I mean, this Neon Girl is the Captain Marvel level of Geek Girl's world, mm-hmm. and is taken down by one blast from Lightning Storm and hospitalized. So she's got extremely powerful lightning powers.
Mm-hmm. So that's Lightning Storm. Has yeah. The powers. Yeah. Now, it's interesting to me that she's not the first one, that Neon Girl is actually the hero ahead of her. And she's actually got somebody to kind of look up to and see as a role model as far as superheroing goes. Now that she's actually met Neon Girl, and over time, I don't want to get too spoilery here, but will Neon Girl play more of a role moving forward in Geek Girl?
Well, she will if she gets out of hospital. Okay. She's in a pretty bad way after the attack from Lightning Storm, which is kind of what, you know, forces Ruby to step up. Mm-hmm. But Neon Girl is the big heroine of the area that Ruby lives in. So whereas Ruby is not so au fait with superheroes, like Summer has like a Neon Girl poster on a college dorm mm-hmm. wall. So again, Summer gets more excitable about the whole superhero thing than Ruby, but that then rubs off on Ruby. But yeah, Neon Girl will feature again in the miniseries, and what capacity and what shape she's in mm-hmm. is to be determined.
Yeah, that's great. Now, Lightning Storm, of course, she's named by the media. We don't know what she calls herself. and all her lightning powers and stuff like that. Of course, lightning is something that's a natural force. So it's kind of interesting that she doesn't seem to say much. She just seems to go out. Why, you know, the question I have is why does she attack Neon Girl? Do we have an idea why that's happening? Because when Geek Girl shows up, she doesn't necessarily know what's going on, and neither do we. So
no.
I'm kind of fascinated by that.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the thing with her. I mean, you have, for example, Spider-Man, you have his rogues gallery. And so if someone is attacking Spider-Man, it's generally someone that's fought him before and that motivation is already there. Neon Girl has come out of nowhere. No one knows who she is. So no one knows why she's attacking Lightning Storm. And it's deliberately, like, as you say, in the preview, she doesn't say anything. It's deliberately left ambiguous as to what her motives are. And like, the issue 3, which is the one we're just about finishing up the art on at the moment, you sort of have an idea of what you think Neon Girl's about, but then there's something that happens in that throws a complete curveball on that. So this is not a sort of black and white supervillain. It's deliberately, well, we're not sure what her motives are, and they won't become clear until we hit the final issue of the miniseries.
No, that's Lightning Storm, of course, the bad girl thing. It's just fascinating to me, too. I always talk with you about the way you do female characters, which I like. And here's a case where we have 3 different female characters. All 3 are in different places. And all 3 of them, of course, are different aspects of superheroes. So this Geek Girl is kind of your book to be able to talk about the superhero genre as well. So talk a little bit about what it is about the female heroes and female villains that attracts you to do like things like Geek Girl.
You know, we've talked about this before, and it's mm-hmm. that it used to be the case that there was kind of a dearth of female-driven books, mm-hmm. which is no longer the case. As I think we discussed last time, Marvel mm-hmm. have a lot of female books. Mm-hmm. But it's not so much that. I mean, I enjoy writing those characters. It's mm-hmm. I can't necessarily deconstruct why that is, but mm-hmm. it's like Carbaccini, the other book we mentioned, is obviously a female character as well. Very different to Geek Girl, but it's something I enjoy writing. It's not the case that I exclusively write female characters. I mean, the Almighties, mm-hmm. there's 5 people in that team and 4 of those are male. But yeah, it's difficult for me to answer. I just know mm-hmm. that I enjoy writing female characters. Mm-hmm. And like, for example, I've got something else planned that will hopefully spin off. I mean, we're talking a long way off here, but hopefully it connects with Carbaccini, and that's another strong female character. Mm-hmm. So it's something I enjoy writing. And again, I think we may have mentioned before, it is very hard for me to sort of deconstruct it because I don't actually read. I don't think I'm currently reading any comics that have a female lead. Mm. Part of the reason for that with me is, I mean, they're really giving it a good go with Captain Marvel. And I know she's got a very strong following and she's fairly close to being up there with, like, you know, your Spidey, your Hulk and so forth. But I don't think there is a female character that is on that same level. The only one that I would put up there is Wonder Woman. And Wonder Woman is not a character I understand or can empathize with. So Geek Girl for me is a very iconic, her look, you know, she's building a following. Like there's the Facebook group. In fact, that's a good place for people to join if they want to look at previews. Mm-hmm. We're up to 10,000 members on that now. And whenever I do a convention, Geek Girl is the one that gets the most attention.
That's kind of fun. She's good. Now, of course, my thing is that, and I always like to bring this up just because I think it's an important subject to talk about occasionally, is that women characters and female characters have tended to be more stereotyped than men, because men can be a genius or a jerk or a villain, and you've got that huge spectrum in there, but women characters have tended to be more, you know, narrowly defined. And I always think that one of the things that you're doing, and I always think that I'd like to congratulate you on that, is that you're broadening, and not to be punny in that, but you're broadening the perspective of what women characters in comics can be like. And I always think that's a very important thing to accomplish in comics, because, you know, we've always had sort of the women in peril, you know, Lois Lane would call out and Superman would come and save her kind of stuff. You're actually taking it in a different direction, and your characters are a lot more fleshed out and a lot more, I think, relatable than the distressed females we've seen in comics so many times.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things with Geek Girl was because of the name of the character, some people expected this character to be very much your sort of typical geeky type character. Mm. Now, obviously, there's got to be a justification for her being called Geek Girl because some people are like, well, she's this hot college chick. This doesn't seem very geeky to me. But what you got to bear in mind with that is, first, she doesn't come up with that name herself. She's labeled that. And also, who Ruby Kay is and who she will become as Geek Girl as that character develops are quite different people. So again, it's like Spider-Man, we wouldn't say is a nerd. Peter Parker was a nerd. So it's where things are going to go is where the name applies more and more.
Who names her Geek Girl, by the way?
Summer. Because and it's off the back of her other friends thinking she looks like a dork in these glasses, so she almost calls a dork girl, and then yeah, we can call you a girl. And Ruby doesn't actually say yes to this, but it seems to stick.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because we see, as I go to conventions and I hang around in the comic stores and things, we're seeing more and more women and young girls get into the comics.
Absolutely. So yeah.
I think the Geek Girl is well timed. You know, it's taken a while for her to hit the stage, but man, I think the audience is there for her, both in women and in men comic readers. I think we're ready for her now more than we've ever been.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the last convention I did was a cosplay convention, and obviously you get a lot of female cosplayers. And I would say, I couldn't say for sure, but I would say there was possibly more girls there than guys. And certainly every convention I've done since I've started, I can see an increase in female readers every time. And also the character Geek Girl, though she's in a very much a sort of female world, this isn't sort of... It's not like a Millie the Model or a Jen and the Holograms thing where this is squarely aimed at female readers. It's not aimed at female readers. It's aimed across the board.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very good, and I like what I'm reading. I can't wait to read the miniseries when it comes out. So you'll keep us up to date as to when that's going to hit the stands. Now, do you know in 2016, generally, like a quarter, when it's going to show up?
No, I couldn't say that yet, because there's a lot to do. And also, it's not necessarily my Actuality Press, I describe as an imprint rather than a publisher. So, like, you may see an Actuality book come out under another publisher. So, like, with Geek Girl, when it is finished, the first thing I'm going to be doing is submitting it to Image Comics. So there's that to factor in as well, because if I was to go straight to releasing it under Actuality Press, it'd be easier to determine a time frame. Okay. But it will be coming out in 2016, but that's all I can say at the moment. Same situation, really, with Carbaccini. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a perfect segue to go into the Carbaccini miniseries that's coming out, too. And this is also going to be 2016 sometime?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're a lot further ahead with that. Carbaccini, the artwork's finished. It's again, it's a 4-issue miniseries. There's only a few bits and pieces to do with that. But yeah, I'm very pleased with how it's turned out. There's a few artists involved, but Artie Ricci is the main artist, and I feel is like the last story he did on it when he'd become more and more sort of connected with Cabra's world, which for those that aren't aware of it, there's a free Cabra book as well called Dark New Year, which you can get at drive-through, and that sets up this dimension called the Infinity that she can go into, which is this bizarre dimension that she uses as a sort of shortcut to get from where she is to reaching her hit, which she does with her voodoo magic. Yeah, so just to fill people in a bit more on Cabra, she's like an ex hooker, junkie, lived a horrific life sort of under the heel of her pimp slash then boyfriend, but has broken free of this in a way that's revealed in this Dark New Year and become empowered with what she has sort of made her own bastardized version of the voodoo art. So she's got that combined with traditional weaponry and is making this living as this hit woman. And yeah, but part of the thing of that is this dimension she accesses the Infinity. The ruler of it doesn't like her using it, so will hit her with everything he's got, both physically and psychologically. And this is taking its toll in ways she may not be fully aware of. But anyway, yes, so what I was saying was that the last story we did on it is set in the Infinity, and is the Infinity and a lot of my stuff, there's an influence there from Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol, and Rachel Pollack, who worked on Doom Patrol, which was what introduced me to the book. And this is the one that references that, and it's nice to get those influences there. I mean, we've even got like a few panels that are like shot in exactly the same way as this first issue of Doom Patrol that I read. And it's this bizarre world. And R.D. Ricci, I think that was the only part of the miniseries that he worked on that involved the Infinity, and it really clicked well with his style, because Kara lives in a very urban environment in Detroit, but then things become a lot more fantastical when she enters this dimension. And yeah, so R.D., bulk of his work was set in a more urban environment, really goes up a notch when we enter into the Infinity.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the first page on the Cavaccini part of the book, I was a little surprised by, you know, she has a new best friend, El Hombre Lobo, which is apparently a large dog. And the whole situation around the dog was just kind of like, wow, that was, she's not necessarily the upright and maybe right-doing thing the geek girl may be.
No. I mean, El Hombre Lobo, Cabra treats him as a dog, but he's a werewolf. So she's walking around with this werewolf on a chain. Now, where he comes from, the preview in Actuality Press 1 is like a snippet of issue 1. The prologue in issue 1 sets all that up, and you'll see how and why she's got Hombre Lobo, and certainly her morality is somewhat questionable in this area. I can't give anything more away about that, but except to say that this guy who is a werewolf who she has chained up as her pet may not necessarily want to be chained up as her pet.
And then we get into the situation. We finally get to meet her opposite number, her nemesis. And he's a character that we see in another book of yours that we'll get to in a couple minutes here. But do you want to talk a little bit about the situation that sets up this whole business where she meets her nemesis?
Yeah, well, Whiteout is who we're talking about. He's a guy that's dressed head to toe in white. He's got like a white mask completely covering his face. And he's massive, racist, and is trying to rid, in his words, rid the neighborhoods of their less desirable elements. So how the connection comes about between him and Cavaccini is he offs. She, because of the kind of low rent neighborhood that she lives in, she has connections, and because of her past, of course, with like hookers and pimps. And he shoots one of these in the preview, I think, actually. Mm-hmm. And that's what the connection between someone that witnesses that and Cabra is what leads to her getting involved. And Whiteout has appeared, for those that have seen The Almighties, has appeared in The Almighties, but The Almighties is a very comedic book. And though he's a quirky, eccentric character, and he has this lobotomized butler, Chives, and he throws these fundraising soirees for his exploits, inviting all the well-to-do people and like serving hors d'oeuvres, but in this absolute hellhole of a disused warehouse. So he's got this weird juxtaposition of it. He speaks like he's very, very posh and so forth, but is getting quite, well, getting very down and dirty. But yes, so whereas those people that see Whiteout in the page of The Almighties will know him one way, that's a comedic book, and things get a lot darker and a lot more serious when we see him entering Cabra's world. And as you say, he's set up as her nemesis. The whole thing with Whiteout is there's this question of whether he's like a ghost. There's a sort of urban legend surrounding him that he was this kid that committed suicide, but we don't know if that's the case, and you don't see his face. So there's an enigma behind him that has a supernatural element that kind of ties into Cabra's sort of having one foot in the world of supernatural.
That's interesting to have the same character have two different perspectives in different comics, because most comic characters tend to be one-dimensional, and you've got him at least two-dimensional and probably three-dimensional in the fact that he's got different things going on in different areas of the universes that you travel in. So I'm kind of finding that kind of interesting. And what's funny is he's they talk about the fact that he kills black guys. And I kind of find that so interesting because, you know, in America, we're going through a time where the death of young black males is a big issue. And so the timing on this one couldn't be any better, I think, because when I read that, that was the first thing I snapped to, was the things that were going on with the police and things like that that we're going through. So I find that kind of an interesting time. And I know you've been thinking about and dealing with this kind of subject for a while, but now it's coming out. And again, I think the timing is perfect for this book and Whiteout because of what's happening with us.
Yeah, Whiteout, yeah. I mean, his motivations are consistent with his appearance in The Almighties. But as I say, that's a comedic book, so everything has a sort of Almighties feel to it, and you're really seeing things from The Almighties' perspective, whereas you go in much more ground level with Carbera. And yeah, this guy has these twisted motivations, which is effectively, to oversimplify it, to rid the world of black people. Now, it's not quite as straightforward as that. I mean, he's targeting, I'm not quite sure what the collective term would be, but you know, we're talking about like pimps and gangsters and people of that world, but it's specifically black people that he's targeting. And that's, I mean, that's Carbera. I mean, the reach does extend. As long as you're black, he's got a problem with you, basically.
Interesting. Of course, this moves right into Almighties, which you started out as a parody book, but it's moved off into a different direction. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that transition took place?
Yeah, we launched The Almighties 1 at the time of the release of the Avengers movie. So we kind of had a look, like the logo was done as a parody of the Avengers. We had a variant cover parody in the Avengers poster. And the framework of that first issue, it's broken up into sort of separate missions, and they're all like comedic nods to the various past big Marvel events such as Fear Itself and Civil War. So it had that whole sort of parody thing for it. But the thing about The Almighties is the characters, that you can draw similarities between, say, Maxitron and Iron Man. They're both, you know, in super, well, Maxitron's more intelligent than he thinks he is, but they're both smart guys in armor. But these are their own characters, and that is the one that is the most similar to a Marvel character. So we sort of made a parodic spin on all of them to associate them with Marvel characters in the context of that issue. But they all are their own people. And for example, like Mason, I mean, The Almighties is co-created by myself and Mike Gagneau. Two of the characters, Nightfang and Mason, are his characters. And Mason, who's this like former black ops borderline psycho, has had a life before The Almighties, as did my character Miss F, who's this former downtrodden housewife, now turned superheroine. So they existed before putting them into this parody universe. And that was done as like a one shot. And then since The Almighties 1, we've had The Almighties 0, which the 0 is significant in that it puts them at ground zero, because after the events of 1, the team is no more. The reason they were put together are no longer applicable. So what happens is you've got another party interested in rebooting them, not necessarily the whole team. But the 0 issue sets up a major threat for what their first mission will be once whoever is reassembled. And it's comedic, and The Almighties will always be comedic, and there will always be parody elements of it. But whereas the issue 1 was, you know, comedic nods to specific Marvel stories and specific Marvel traits, this is The Almighties the comedy book rather than The Almighties the parody book.
That's a good one. Well, the characters are kind of interesting on their own, too. I really like them all. It's a very different kind of a team. And that, the thing I really want to get to is the fact that Whiteout now is in this book, but he's a very different kind of character in this book. So he's the one that kind of brings the team back together again. And
sorry to interrupt you. It's Whiteout that originally assembles the team.
Okay.
In issue 1. And then when we get to issue 0, it's a guy, Joe Cyborg, that works for the White House that is looking at rebooting them. So Whiteout brought them together in the first place. But Whiteout, after the events of issue 1, is firmly out of the picture for The Almighties. They would not consider working with him again once the events of issue 1 have played out.
Okay, very good. So it's interesting that he's had influences. And of course, I just I'm just kind of fascinated to see, because if the Almighties are going to cross over with Carpaccini at some point, because when you've got a character like this that's involved in both series, it just naturally feels like what's going to happen is Carpaccini might need more information on the character and go to the Almighties to find that kind of thing out. Is that something you might have in mind for us in the future?
Well, all the characters in the actuality books are living in a shared universe, but all three of the books have a very different feel. So whether it would necessarily work to have a much more, although there is dark humor in Carbra and there are some comedic characters. I mean, Whiteout himself has comedic elements to him. It's a very different feel to the Almighty. So I don't know that Carbra and the Almighty would necessarily cross over. Okay. But it is all a shared universe. And for example, the Carbra of the Dark New Year thing that I mentioned, that features a character called Mr. Mashup, who's this villain that can sort of, he harbors this vessel inside himself that he can tap into people's minds and sort of create a clone of them with this vessel. So they can effectively, this vessel can appear as though it's that person to the person. And he does that, and what his raison d'etre tends to be is, excuse my French, is he'll tap into someone's mind and find like the person they most hate or fear. So in the case of the Dark New Year Carbra story, we're looking at Carbra's former boyfriend slash pimp, his clone. It appears to Carbra that this is the boyfriend pimp back from the dead. So we've got Mashup there, and then Mashup also appeared in Geek Girl Zero and will feature in the Geek Girl miniseries. Again, tapping into Ruby's mind to use his clone vessel to bring about her deepest hatred and fears in human form. That's quite a dark character, but it works in the context that it's a villain in Geek Girl, whereas if you've got the Almighties, a much, you know, more sort of knockabout, I don't know that that would work with Carbaccino. I mean, if I came up with an idea that would make it work, then fine, but all of this is quite organic, and like the Carbra and Geek Girl miniseries, I've always had a very specific character arc that I want to tell with both of these. So it's like, if it feels natural to have an element of crossover, then that's something I enjoy about comics, but it's never going to be just having a crossover for the sake of having a crossover.
Now, as far as the Almighties go, Almighties Zero is a historical one, and the fact that we're getting back to look back at how they came together and things like that. How does the sequence go as far as you did Almighties number one, and then we did Zero, which was a predecessor book. Moving forward, are you going to do more in the past, or are you going to continue on with the present, as it were?
Well, I mean, the Almighties Zero takes place after the Almighties one. The sort of retro part to it is you have Joe Cyborg and Stephanos, who's a member of the Almighties, slash works in a takeout, slash works for Barack Obama. They're reviewing the Almighties dossiers. So we flash back to the Almighties before they became part of the team with that. But where it goes from there, the main part of issue zero takes place after issue one. So basically what we're doing there is the dossiers are being reviewed, we're getting to know these characters, and then because Joe Cyborg has reservations about at least one of them, he's also got a backup potential member in the form of Wayne Winston, who does tie back into the parody element, because Wayne Winston is a Deadpool Wade Wilson parody. So we introduce Wayne Winston in this issue. I think that's the first time I've mentioned to get out a sentence with Wayne Winston and Wade Wilson in without getting tongue-tied, so I'm quite impressed. there's three stories in issue zero. The first one is the review of the Almighties and where they're going to go with this, and then the next one is introduces Wayne Winston and his family, and then the third story is a Stephanos adventure. I mean, Stephanos is the quirkiest member of the team. He just appears to be some sort of overweight guy that works in a burger joint. There's no apparent reason for him either being a superhero team or being this confidant of Barack Obama. And in the final story of Zero, he gets assigned this mission by Obama that ties into the history of the Almighties. So there's a time travel element. So again, it's like we're going back, but it's all in present day, if I can say that without bending everyone's brain too much with timey-wimey stuff, to borrow from Dr. But yeah, at the end of The Almighty Zero, we've got a setup there for what's to come. The big threat is established. We've seen all the potential members. So what will come next will be a kind of, not in the New 52 sense, but a reboot of The Almighty's in the wake of the fallout from The Almighty's 1. And we'll see where things go from there.
Now, Almighty's number 0 and number 1 are available now. And can you go through drive-through and also through actualitypress.com to get those?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you go actualitypress.com, links you to everything. I think on the front page of it, you'll find links to everywhere that, you know, you can get these books. I mean, issue 0 and 1 are both available in print and digital, as is Geek Girl 0. So, yeah, you can get, just if you go actualitypress.com, you'll be able to go where you need to go.
Okay, now, the question, you're working on Cappuccini and you're also working on Geek Girl. Do you have more Almighties coming down the road sometimes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. What's happening in issue 0 is very much designed to set up the next chapter. And I say a chapter, again, I use the term reboot loosely, but it will be very much an accessible entry point for the Almighties and hopefully further adventures to come for them. Mike and I have rough scripted quite a lot of stuff. The new one is fully finished script-wise and the art's underway on it. So, yeah, I mean, we want to do more Almighties as well, yeah.
Right now. Do you have any kind of idea? Might that also come in 2016, or is it less scheduled than the others?
Yeah, it's hard to say with that, because for one thing, we're only a few pages into the art. So yeah, I couldn't really say on that, whereas this is a kind of a relatively new book we've been working on, whereas Geek Girl and Cabra have been in the works for quite some time. So yeah, but on the other hand, whereas, you know, as it stands, we're waiting for the Geek Girl and Cabra Mini, there are two Almighty's books out there already, so people don't need to wait on the new one if they've not already been introduced to this bunch of miscreants.
Well, you're a busy guy. You've got three books in the works and working on all of them, seems like. So, man, you're keeping things going. And the quality of the storytelling is really good. I think both the art and the scripting is really strong. And all three of them, and again, we get to see things that we don't see other places, so I always like that. I always like something that's a little different, so that I get to go places I haven't been before. So you're doing good stuff with that, Sam. Are there other things you're working on, or is that kind of the max you guys can handle at this point?
Well, there are other things that I've scripted, but as it stands at the moment, I'm trying not to be juggling plates, spinning plates. So right now the focus is primarily getting Geek Girl ready, because that's the one there's still a fair bit to do, but not so much that I don't know when it will be done. As I say, it will be out next year. So once I think that's kind of locked down, then I've got other things that I want to assign artists to. I've came up with a new series idea that I want to work on, but I don't want to take too much on at once. So the focus is, you know, getting it all done. As I say, two of these books have been in the works for some time, and they're very important to me to get them completed and out there. So, because as well as being the writer, I'm the editor on these books. So I'm working with artists and colorists, and I'm editing their work. So even if I'm not writing something at a particular time, I'm still involved in the process of the book throughout.
Very good. Well, it's good stuff, Sam. And, you know, I hope things continue on, and we will follow and get updates from you as things come out. When you get a firmer date on stuff like that, we'll have to talk some more about when these good books are going to come out. But it's great that you've been able to give us some kind of an idea as to what the story's going to be like and what we can expect. So I really like that a lot.
Yeah, and as I say, to get a full, proper, full-color preview of all of them, if you get the Actuality Press 1, which you can get at the website we've mentioned, then that'll get you right in at this ground level for it.
Well, that's great. Well, Sam, you're doing good stuff, and keep it up, and keep us informed, because we need to know more about these things as they come out. So, excellent stuff, and, you know, keep it up, Sam.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
that's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another great interview. But until then, keep reading your comics.